All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Bruce Cassidy presiding. All about business before this court, draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. You may be seated.
Thank you. Good morning, I'm Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Mormon. To my left is Judge Davis. We're here today in the matter of Michael Bartlett. It has a docket number of 084092. Would counsel for the parties please note your appearance for the record.
Good morning, Chief Judge Castle. My name is James Peister. On behalf of the veteran, Michael Bartlett, with me and my colleague, Jim McKeon.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning. Representing the Secretary, I'm Mark McNabb. With me at counsel table is Deputy Assistant General Counsel Joan Moyer.
Thank you. Welcome. Both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present an argument. Mr. Peister, do you want to reserve time?
Yes, sir. I've asked the clerk to reserve 7 minutes of time.
Seven?
Yes.
That's the first time I've had seven. You got it. You may proceed.
May it please the court. The core question for this court today is really quite narrow. It is, what does the term hospital care mean in the statute 38 U.S.C. 1151? Or perhaps more aptly, what can the term mean? And this question has been raised under the following circumstances. Mr. Bartlett was an inpatient psychological care at a lockdown psychiatric facility in August of 1989. One day when he was attending dinner at the cafeteria at the facility, at the lockdown facility, he was attacked in an unprovoked fashion by a deranged patient.
Is this a closed facility only for patients?
Yes, sir. This particular ward was. I don't know if the entire hospital was. It was a lockdown ward.
How about where he was eating? Was that part of the lockdown?
Yes, that was in the lockdown facility. Mr. Bartlett was attacked unprovoked by a deranged patient who was under the care of hospital orderlies. He, as the record reflects at page 511, he did nothing to provoke this attack. He was simply standing there and was...
So why do you think it's covered by medical care?
We do not think it's covered. We think it's covered by hospital care, Your Honor.
Why do you think it's covered by hospital
care? We think it's covered by hospital care, Your Honor, and it's because the supervision of the hospital orderlies in the cafeteria setting was the hospital care at issue, and the negligent supervision is what led approximately to the injuries.
Do you know if that's generally a malpractice claim in the civil litigation that occurs in the states?
I am not sure, Your Honor. I'm not sure that the malpractice definition controls the interpretation of 1151 either. I would assert that it doesn't necessarily.
How can you, counsel, separate the words caused by from hospital care?
I do not separate them in terms of we certainly agree that we must prove that the situation was hospital care and that the injuries were caused by the negligent hospital care. If I understand your question, I would simply note that there's nothing in the statute which indicates that an act of omission cannot cause an injury. And that's what we would allege here, is that the hospital orderlies on site at the cafeteria who were there and who rushed to pull the deranged patient off of my client the first time he was attacked before he was immediately attacked again while they were standing in the near premise. That this supervisory care that Mr. Bartlett expected and was owed in the specific context of a lockdown psychiatric facility was negligently provided. And that therefore, this negligent care caused, both in a but-for sense and in the proximate cause sense, as required by statute, caused the injuries sustained by my client.
So, Mr. Peister, are you suggesting that there be a security guard accompanying the patient at all times or some medical personnel in line with the patient?
Judge Davis, I'm not saying that is a requirement. What I'm saying is that in the circumstances as they were, these orderlies were in the cafeteria for the purpose of supervising the hospital patients who were there. And in their supervisory role, they were there to make sure exactly what happened to my client didn't happen.
In their supervisory role, are they expected to deal with unforeseen attacks?
Yeah, and In this context, absolutely. If this were a cafeteria at a normal family outpatient clinic, perhaps not. But the context matters here, I believe. And that is one of the key points, I think, is that...
Well, the board never got to unforeseen consequences, right? The board just simply said this was not hospital care.
Correct.
And in fact, the board limited it quite narrowly to medical and surgical care, did it not?
It absolutely did.
And your point is that if the statute reads hospital care, medical and surgical care, that hospital care is something broader.
It has to have its own meaning. It cannot be defined by the other terms.
Is your point that the confinement is an integral part of the care being provided?
Yes. It is both an integral part of the care, but it's also an integral circumstance that helps define the term hospital care in this circumstance.
Why isn't aren't cases like Mangum and Schweitzer and Jackson controlling here?
Okay. I can deal with each case in turn, or I can speak more.
Let's deal with them in turn. Okay. Mangum, Schweitzer, and Jackson.
Okay. Mangum first. Mangum is perhaps the most factually similar case. I think that makes sense to start with it. There are two key differences between Mangum and this case. The first is the nature of the facility at question. In Mangum, which you had a voluntary domiciliary type facility, which patients came and go from. They were there by their own choice. The type of care they were receiving there was ambiguous. It's not exactly clear what they were there for. I understand that counsel in Mangum argued that there was some sort of socialization treatment, but that wasn't entirely clear. Here, what you have is a lockdown psychiatric ward. You cannot get a situation that is more engaged with constant care than a lockdown facility of this nature. So we would first note
wasn't the appellant there of his own volition?
He was there of his own volition, but as part of a plea bargain. So I think that volition here is a little tricky. He was subject to the lockdown procedures, and he understood that if he left, that could put his plea bargain at jeopardy and potentially lead to some sort of imprisonment. So I think that in that context, he was not there entirely voluntarily. He understood his condition to be to be committed. That's actually in the record that he believed.
Sort of like when the judge says, go to jail or join the army?
Yes, perhaps that's a good analogy. So back to your question, Judge Davis, of Mangum. That in that situation that's the first key difference. There is the nature of the facility. I believe that is an operative difference. A second difference here is the fact that we're not talking about one attack here. We're actually talking about two, and I believe that's actually quite relevant because even if you were to take the view that the first attack on Mr. Bartlett's body by this deranged patient were analogous to the gunman in Mangum, we would contend it's not. But if you took the position that it was, the second attack is very different in nature because now you no longer are talking about sort of a general supervisory role of hospital orderlies. You're talking about a person who has been attacked, who these hospital orderlies or nurses have run to take care of them, to get them off the ground, to make sure they were okay, and then have told them to go back in line. And in that immediate aftermath, as the record reflects, the same individual who attacked him the first time was apparently not secured, ran straight at him again, knocked him down again, and at that point, he complained of the symptoms, the whiplash symptoms.
Just to clarify, if I can, the board did not find those facts.
Correct.
The board refused to find any facts, or did not.
The finding of fact is 24 words long.
So that would be the second step. You first have to get into whether or not we're involved with hospital care.
Yes. The reason I bring up the second attack is only because hospital care here, to the extent it wasn't hospital care the first time, the level of care increased before the second attack. Now you had multiple hospital personnel on site in the immediate proximity of my client.
I have another question, but I think he had another case to talk
about. He has two more cases.
We're going to do that now.
Answer Judge Davis.
Okay. The second case I believe you mentioned was Schweitzer.
Right.
I think there are a couple differences here between the sort of Schweitzer-loving doctrine and what's going on here. In those two cases, the injury was caused by what I think is fair to say, particularly in Loving, a freak event, whether it's a falling grate, whether it's someone driving by and smacking you with a wheelchair. These things are unexpected, something that can't be anticipated, and they're not incident to hospital care, medical or surgical treatment or examination. Here, it's different, and the reason it's different is because the attack by a patient in an inpatient psychiatric ward is quite foreseeable. It is exactly the reason why you have hospital orderlies on site in the cafeteria in greater numbers than you would in a normal hospital.
And didn't the orderlies respond appropriately?
Well, I mean, no.
I mean, outside of being chained to each of the inpatients who are locked up in this facility, how could they have intervened more effectively?
Well, okay, there are two answers to that question, Judge Mormon. The first is that, as we understand, as our client understood at the time, that this particular patient was actually being escorted individually by orderlies, that he was, in particular, a known deranged patient who needed individual attention. And so that...
But doesn't that reflect a higher level of attention by the hospital facility then?
Not if those people negligently or carelessly allowed him to charge at an innocent person and knock them down. And that's the first time. The second time, I think, you certainly have to say that they did not provide the care. Because even if you say that, well, look, there's just, you know, they're human, this guy was big and strong and ran fast and knocked my client over, the second time they were on direct notice that a conflict had occurred between these two patients, that my client had done nothing to provoke it, was still in harm's way, and yet they stood by and watched a second attack occur within a minute of the first attack. And that certainly has to rise to a level of...
I won't promise not to say this again, but those facts were never found by the board, right?
So
at this point, whether they provided the proper care or not the care, we don't know. First question is, what is the care?
Exactly right. Okay. The question, the central question here is how you define hospital.
You have another case.
Oh, Jackson. Jackson, this is going to be a nice segue. Jackson actually, in our opinion, does not work against our case. It actually endorses the position we're taking in more than one respect.
But Jackson has hospitalization as the operative language, if I recall.
Yes. It should be noted, as we did in our brief, that Jackson was interpreting the old version of 1151, and therefore the discussion of hospital care in the new 1151 was dicta. We think that it's of arguable precedential weight. What we would note about Jackson are two things. First, the analysis of the word hospitalization, albeit in the old statute, proceeds exactly in line with the way we are asking this court to analyze hospital care here. They specifically note that there are three terms on the list in the old statute, that hospitalization is the third term, that the third term cannot be defined by the first two terms, and that therefore that it must mean something on its own. That's at page 825 of that opinion. That's the first point. So that as a matter of law, I think it's actually quite instructive here. In terms of the specifics of hospital care, what all they state about hospital care in their dicta is that hospital care implies the provision of care by the hospital specifically as opposed to the broader, more general experience of a patient during the course of hospitalization. We don't dispute that. We don't dispute that the facts as seen in Brown v. Gardner would no longer be coverable now under the new statute. We freely recognize that. But all this tells us is that you have to establish that hospital care is occurring at the time of the injury and that it is proximately caused the injury itself through carelessness or negligence.
Is it your position that once you're in a lockdown facility, you are receiving hospital care 24/7?
No, we don't need to go that far here. I don't believe that is our position. I believe that position has actually been rejected in other cases. So we don't need to take that view. What's important here is that hospital care is occurring in set situations where the facility has deemed that supervisory personnel in the form of hospital orderlies need to be present at all times to ensure that patients are safe.
So they had a duty to ensure the safety of the patients from the other patients.
Absolutely. That's inherent when you're dealing with...
And that constitutes the provision of hospital care.
In the supervising the safety of the patients was part of the hospital care. Hospital orderlies are absolutely fundamental to the provision of mental health services in a lockdown facility. Without them, chaos would reign. And while they are not performing medical treatment, we concede that absolutely up front, they are providing hospital care, part of the care received in an inpatient lockdown facility. So that is why we would assert that hospital care is at issue in this case.
And you didn't look at any other cases outside of the VA system to see if hospital care had been interpreted to include your argument, I gather.
I did not.
Did you look at the legislative history?
We attempted to, myself and my colleague at the...
Is that legislative history focused almost entirely on overturning Gardner with regard to liability for non-practice related injuries?
We found very little... I found very little to no statutory... legislative history, excuse me. But I do understand that that is the basis for the new statute. We do not dispute it. We recognize it in our briefs. That the intent...
And so if the intent was to overturn liability for non-malpractice-related injuries, we come back once again to what is malpractice?
Yes,
and I think that... what is the duty owed to a patient?
What is the duty owed to a patient? It's certainly...
And so it might have made sense to look at outside the VA system of cases.
I apologize. So
you might find a number of cases that find that there's a special duty to patients who are in a hospital, in a psychiatric ward. Mm-hmm. And that the whole issue here comes down to, as you do say in your brief, medical care. Anyway.
Yeah. I'll just proceed a little bit longer. I think that it's important to note here that the VA has struggled with this statute for quite a while. The Brown v. Gardner opinion takes the VA to task somewhat in noting, I believe, the eccentricity of their interpretation. And we think that a similar eccentricity has gone on here, where over time, all levels of the VA have come to understand the term hospital care to lack its own meaning. I mean, when you have it being defined by the other terms on the list, it no longer has a meaning of its own, and that conflicts with the most basic and fundamental tenets of statutory.
So even more narrowly than just hospital care, you're saying that the board erroneously narrowed it to only surgical and medical.
Well, just the regional office, the board, and yes, and in the briefs, yes, it appears everyone has taken that definitional position, and we would assert.
So all we need to decide is that it can't be limited to those two.
Correct. That would be the first. I think obviously we would ask that you provide guidance on what it does mean. That would include our facts. But yes,
you'd ask us to look to maybe the state laws and see what medical care is defined as, or hospital care.
I think there are a number of ways that could be utilized to help provide guidance. I do think that it's important in any definition that would be set forth would be that it recognized that context matters. That what counts as hospital care in one setting may not count as hospital care in another setting, and vice versa. And that therefore a statute which lays out four or five or six things which count as hospital care may not be instructive. Certain things will always be hospital care. If you're getting stitches in your arm at a VA facility, that's going to be hospital care, but it's probably also medical treatment. But I think that there needs to be a recognition that hospital care has to be a flexible term. And in fact, that is somewhat recognized in the definition of hospital care at 38 U.S.C. 1701, which I will state up front with my apologies that we did not discover that definition of hospital care until preparation for this oral argument. So it's not in our briefs, but I know that it's been talked about in other 1151 cases. So
Let's take a look at that definition. Sure. That's provided in the statute, then. Take a look at 5 sub A and walk me through how that fits your argument.
Okay. I think,
and then sub B as well.
Sure. I think the key, with your indulgence, if I may start before sub A, and there's only 5 words, but they're very important, I think. The term hospital care includes. The word includes is vital here. I think it reflects exactly what I'm saying, which is that you can't define hospital care because it means different things in different places. And so this Congress quite rightly recognized that certain things will always count as an aspect of hospital care, and other things might at times. And so what you see under A is medical services rendered in the course of hospitalization. Well, that is one aspect of hospital care. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. It's not the only aspect, though. And I'd also note that...
Pose an example. So if in a lockdown facility a psychiatrist sat down with a group of patients and said, Joe, tell me why Rob makes you mad. And Joe turns to Rob and says, you irritate the heck out of me because of X. And Rob responds then in a physical manner. There you'd have clearly treatment being provided, and you could argue that it provoked an attack.
Yes, I think you would be, yes, under the medical treatment prong of 1151, you would argue that that is a covered incident.
Okay.
I would just note also
be clear on the definitions.
Sure.
That definition is for purposes of a specific chapter.
Yes, I was going to note that myself.
Did you happen to look at the definition in 1803?
No, sir, I did not.
Hospital care means care and treatment for a disability furnished to an individual who's been admitted to a hospital as a patient. I'll note that that also is limited to, I believe, this section.
Okay. Yeah.
But it was in the same legislation and bill that passed.
Okay.
That provided the provisions we're talking about now.
I was unaware. So I would just also note that under 5A2 of 1701, they actually talk, I mean, not that this is directly relevant to our case, talking about the travel and incidental expenses pursuant to the provision of Section 3111 of this title. All I would note there is that that sets out that hospital care actually might have a very broad meaning potentially. I mean, they're now talking about incidental expenses as sort of part of the hospital care experience, and that's far beyond medical services. And while we're not talking about incidental expenses here, I think that does give some credence to the assertion that hospital care is not bound by medical services, that the term includes, recognizes a large subset of activities which might count as hospital care in certain circumstances.
At least for that chapter.
At least for that chapter, right. And to the extent we're going to use that as guidance in 1151. If there's any other questions, I'll reserve the balance.
Mr. Peister, I do have another question.
Sure.
I'm curious. Let's suppose I agree for a moment that the board's definition is too narrow for hospital care, and not quite certain that the scope of the definition that you're asking the court to adopt here. At what point, you know, where is the bright line that we draw between someone standing at a hospital desk being admitted to the hospital and another patient coming by and whacking them over the head with a baseball bat? Is that hospital care versus hospital care in this situation where you have a patient who is shoved by another patient, not directly involving the orderlies in administering any type of care other than supervision, but something that goes more indirectly to cause the injury than directly by the employees of the hospital. Obviously, if we are to develop a definition, we need to have some lines of demarcation here. So let me ask you the hard question. Where do we go?
It is a hard question indeed. As to your example, I think, again, my answer would be that context matters, that if someone's checking in at the front in the emergency room and some crazy person runs in with a bat and hits them, that's not the sort of event one would anticipate in the waiting room of an emergency room. However, if the check-in desk, for reasons I can imagine, happened to be in the inpatient lockdown facility, then that probably would be a hospital care situation if there were supervising hospital orderlies on staff. As to the bright line definition, I recognize it's hard, and I'm not sure that any one bright line definition is going to serve the purpose that the court wants. The bright line definition that it means nothing cannot be right. In this situation, then, I think that certain principles that should be looked at are: what are the special duties owed to the patients in that setting of the injury? What is expected of that time? What kind of is expected of the patients in that setting? When is care being provided? When is supervising expected? These questions, I think, might lead to a definition, but I do appreciate the dilemma of how you define it in a way that's helpful to the regional offices and to the BVA and all that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You'll have 6 extra seconds.
That's okay. I don't mind.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. The secretary respectfully requests that the court affirm the board's decision.
So let's look at the board decision. Specifically, took the fact pattern as alleged by the veteran. Do you agree? Do you agree that the board rendered its decision on the fact pattern as alleged by the veteran without making its own finding of facts?
I believe the board made findings of facts.
You want to turn to page 9 of the, or page 11 of the record, page 9 of the board decision.
Yes, sir.
Doesn't it say the fact patterns alleged by the veteran falls outside the current scope of 1151?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's a correct legal conclusion.
Okay. And then a little bit further down, did it not define hospital care as limited only to treatment and examination rendered by VA?
Yes, Your Honor, it does. And I believe
do you stand by that definition?
No, Your Honor.
Do we have anything further?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that this claim still must fail as a matter of law, that any error in the board's decision in that respect.
Wouldn't we have to find facts to apply the law?
No, Your Honor.
No. Okay, go ahead.
In this case, the board made a factual finding that the events in this case were coincident with VA hospitalization and that they were an intervening event. And those fact findings are sufficient to apply this court's case law in Mangum, Loving, Schweitzer, and also the Jackson.
Where did we define hospital care in any of those cases?
Hospital care in the Schweitzer case is the definition in 1701 is used to determine whether a particular domiciliary care is hospital care. So 1701 was used in the Mangum case as the measuring stick for hospital care.
Okay, so how does that preclude the situation as presented by your counsel, opposing counsel?
I believe that the definition in 1701...
Did the board define the duties of anybody in this case?
No, Your Honor. The
Did
board
they define the duties that were owed to this patient who was in a lockdown ward with these other people who might be dangerous?
No, Your Honor. The board found
and
that...
And how could we apply the law?
Because the findings of the board are relevant to the law, and the findings of the board are that the events that occurred were coincident with VA hospitalization and an intervening event, and that finding necessarily means that they are not a part of the care.
So are we to take from that and add the reasons and basis that the board somehow examined the duty that was owed and then found that the duty failed?
No, Your Honor. The board simply needed to determine whether, as was the case in the Mangum case, whether the event, in this case that they found coincident and an intervening event, whether that event was part of VA's hospital care, medical or surgical treatment, or an examination. And because under no circumstance is the action of this third party a part of VA's treatment, then the Mangum rationale would apply and no further fact-finding need be made.
So is it your position then that under this law only employees of VA who commit acts of commission or omission create a claim?
Your Honor, we believe that, as this court stated in Mangum, based on the Federal Circuit's thinking in Jackson, the operative issue, Your Honor, is whether VA's direct actions caused the harm. That applies equally to all of the terms in 1151, including hospital care, as was made clear in Mangum.
So if we take this fact pattern that nobody seems to disagree with and extend it somewhat and say that we have a situation where a person is obviously mentally out of control and is throwing furniture around in a lockdown ward, that VA has no potential claims liability under 1151. For injuries that might occur to patients, regardless if they have 27 employees standing around with their hands in their pockets?
I believe that any service provided in that respect is a service but not a medical service. It's medical services that are the subject of 1151. And so while under the Federal Torts Claim Act, the veteran may have a claim against the government, 1151, as this court noted in its footnote in Mangum, is narrowly focused on those instances in which a veteran is harmed directly by VA medical treatment. That's clearly not the case in this case, where a third party twice pushed the veteran in a meal line.
But this isn't an issue about medical treatment, is it? I thought you agreed that hospital care was something broader than medical or surgical.
Hospital care, as defined by 38 U.S.C. 1701, is broader, Your Honor, than simply...
So it doesn't have to be focused on just direct treatment.
It does need to be focused, Your Honor, on...
Are you familiar with Ogle versus St. John's Hickey at 473 Northeast 2nd, 1055?
I'm not, Your Honor.
Holding that the Malpractice Act governs an alleged failure to protect a psychiatric patient from sexual assault because the confinement was integral to the diagnosis and treatment of her condition? Does VA say that that wouldn't be an integral part of care provided to somebody? And if a client or a patient was sexually assaulted by another patient in a lockdown ward, you'd say there's no malpractice, there's no, well, hospital care being violated? Does VA take that position?
I don't have a position on that particular.
And we don't know what the board would say either, do we?
No, Your Honor, but we do know in this.
Are you familiar with Bemenstadt versus United States, 866 F. 2nd 493, D.C. Circuit?
No, Your Honor.
Rising out of an Army Medical Center. Hospital owed a duty to its patients to protect them from sexual abuse for psychiatric. Special duty between plaintiff and hospital. Does VA take a different position?
I'm not familiar with the case, Your Honor.
So we don't have a definition of hospital care per se that would preclude the situation presented by your opposing counsel, do we?
Your Honor, I believe that the definition of hospital care in 1701 and adopted by this court in Mangum.
I don't know if it was adopted. It was certainly referred to. What about the definition of hospital care in 1803?
That's a circumstance that, while slightly different, is limited to care for a disability and treatment. That's.
And so I put you in a lockdown ward with other people, and part of the care doesn't include keeping them from beating you up?
Your Honor, I believe this court's has addressed these theories in cases such as Schweitzer and as well as in Mangum.
And both of those, neither of those rested on hospital care, did they?
No, Your Honor, in Mangum.
So we're facing, for the first instance, a direct address of what is meant by hospital care, a board that defined it very narrowly as medical and what's the other word?
Services.
And you're asking us to now apply a definition the board didn't apply in the first instance to facts that were never found by the board. Don't you think you're going over broad?
No, Your Honor, because I believe the board's findings are relevant here, that under no circumstance are the actions of the third party intended as part of the treatment, and thus the court's thinking in Mangum would apply.
Part of the treatment was not putting him in a confinement ward? And part of the treatment of everybody in there wasn't part of the confinement ward?
If that were the view, then everything that occurred there, all of the hospitalization, would be considered hospital care. And we believe there is a distinction between hospital care and hospitalization, even in the lockdown context.
Well, that's true. There is a difference. But if you are locked down, that's different than just being in a hospital. It's a lot different if you go to the flower shop in a hospital and versus being locked down where the place that you eat is with the same people and patients that you're with a bunch of guards standing around.
Well, Your Honor, that's true. It is different. However,
isn't the key difference between this the fact that somewhere along the line, if we ever got there, we'd have to show that the duty that was owed to this patient was or was not violated? And that the circumstances were or were not unforeseen. But we never got there down below because nobody knows what medical care is, or at least the board applied such a narrow definition.
Well, Your Honor, it's true those are downstream issues, but we believe that the board's findings here are the findings that need to be made, that clearly the acts of a third party are coincident with VA hospitalization and an intervening event, and therefore not the direct action of VA, and those are, as this court noted in the footnote in Mangum, this is an 1151 claim, and 1151 is narrowly focused on the instances in which the veteran is harmed directly by VA medical treatment.
Which isn't the issue. Again, you keep going back to medical treatment. I agree with you. The case says that, but we're not talking about that here, are we? We're talking about hospital care.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, the Mangum Court did broadly include in a lot of its language all of the terms encompassed in within 1151. As they note in the Mangum case, that they found that case flawed because it couldn't show that the shooting was part of VA's hospital care, medical or surgical treatment, or an examination. I think that the coincident with rationale that's been with this court since Schweitzer still applies to hospital care. It was applied, and the Jackson court had a hospital care case. They made clear that
Jackson had a hospitalization and talked a little bit about the difference between the two statutes, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So it wasn't really a hospital care case.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor. It was a hospitalization case because it was under the old 1151. But this court in Mangum noted that this court read the Jackson court as saying that in the 1996 amendments, Congress repudiated the notion that a coincidental event occurring during hospitalization could lead to recovery under 1151, purposefully replacing that word with hospital care. We believe that in doing so, the pre-existing definition of hospital care in 1701 is relevant, and that includes medical services rendered in the course of hospitalization, and that medical services is then further defined in 1701 as including medical examinations, treatment, but then going broader to include surgical services, dental services, optometric services, preventative health services, et cetera.
Right, and the definition of hospital care that was in the legislation that passed when Gardner was overturned, applying to 1803, means care and treatment for disability furnished in the hospital.
In particular,
there's your care, hospital care.
Yes, Your Honor, although that is limited only to spina bifida, so it's a very...
Well, the other one's limited only to its chapter, too.
Except that it's that chapter that the veteran is receiving services under here, and the benefits flow out of Chapter 17, not out of Chapter 18. The veteran was receiving Chapter 17 services, and we agree that he was receiving services at the time. It's simply that he wasn't receiving medical services as those are defined, and hospital care requires, the definition of hospital care includes most prominently medical services.
Counsel, is there any room in your proposed definition of hospital care for the fluidity of the appellant's position? That is, it depends on the facility and the type and the nature of the circumstances under which the patient is being treated.
Certainly, Your Honor, individual circumstances will vary. What we believe is the case is that this circumstance will never fall within it because the service being provided in this case is not a hospital service, and because it is not a medical service or one of the other types of services contemplated by the definition in Chapter 17 of hospital care and of medical services.
So hospital care would never be so broad based upon that 1701 definition to include safety of a patient in a lockdown psychiatric facility?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. I believe that's not to say that there is not a duty of care, that there's not a service being provided, and that there aren't remedies out there. It's simply that that's not the type of situation that 1151 contemplates, that is medical.
So let's say the veteran was in a room that had mold growing in it, holes in the ceiling, and all the other things that we read about that happened to Walter Reed. That wouldn't be 1151 at all?
Your Honor, I believe that would be analogous to Loving. That there is a duty of care there, that it had not been fulfilled, but any recovery would be under the Federal Tort Claim Act and not under 1151. If there are no further questions, Your Honor.
Give my colleagues a second. I think there are none. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You have relinquished your 6 seconds, so you have 7 minutes.
I got a clock. Stop taking your shape.
You'll wait. You may proceed.
All right, thank you. Couple points to make in response, and then I'll hopefully get down before the 7 minutes are over. The first point on the findings, quote unquote, by the BVA, Your Honor, ably pointed to page 11 of the record, which shows that they accepted the veteran's asserted facts. I'd also note that on page 4 of the record, the findings of fact are one sentence long, including no actual findings. The words coincident and intervening are focused on by counsel for the secretary. I think it's obviously important to note there that the fact that the event was coincident and intervening is necessarily intertwined with the premise that hospital care is defined as only treatment and examination. If you define hospital care as only treatment or examination, then what happened to my client is a coincident intervening act. We wouldn't dispute that. The problem is that, by the agency's own admission now, that definition is flawed. And so what we're talking about is if the term is properly defined, and properly defined, as we would assert, to include the supervisory role of hospital orderlies in a lockdown psychiatric facility, all of a sudden now, this is no longer a coincident event. It's an anticipated event in the supervisory role, and it's no longer intervening. It's the exact event which they're there to prevent. And so now you're no longer talking about the fallen grade. You're talking about something that is directly tied to hospital care, and to use the loving phrase, it's in the same sequence of events, I believe is the phrase they used, the natural sequence of events. And so I think we just make that point in terms of the BVA's finding. Again, I just want to assert that we are not bound in this, in our position, by the term medical services. That keeps coming up. Chief Judge Castledeff obviously called that out a little bit, but that medical services is only one definition on a non-exclusive list that constitutes hospital care under 1701. So to the extent 1701 even applies here, which the court has taken to some, has used it as guidance, I don't think they said it's binding, but to the extent it is providing guidance that includes needs to be given in its weight, that Congress doesn't put the word includes ... if they don't want it to have an open-ended meaning, that they are quite adept at having a closed definition. Indeed, I mean, 1151 has a closed definition. It has three terms on a list, and that's what it is. It's either medical surgical treatment, examination, or hospital care. That's a closed definition. Again, we would I also want to make it clear that we are alleging that the injuries suffered by my client are directly tied to the hospital care at issue here. While we would agree that the orderly did not reach out and strike my client, that didn't happen. What happened here is the negligent supervision. It's an act of omission. It's a failure to stop something from occurring. I draw the analogy without intending to disparage patients in a facility, but a person walking a dog is not attacking the innocent bystander. The dog attacks the bystander, but the person walking the dog is responsible for the pet. And the failure to supervise, the failure to control something under your responsibility, does give rise to causation. And under common law negligence theory. And that's exactly the sort of causation we're talking about here, the failure to supervise, the failure to protect my client, which was the duty in their role at that time when the incident occurred. So that's the position we take. That's all I have.
No further questions. We'll submit the case. Come down and greet counsel.
All rise.